From Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Governor Newsom turns out next year, and there is a growing list of candidates to succeed him. But momentum has been weighed down to a big question mark, whether former Vice President Kamala Harris would throw her hat into the race. She said she would let California voters know by August, and she made good on that promise, announcing yesterday that she would not be running for governor in her home state, which has left many questions about Harris's political future, and it also breathed new life into the 2026 gubernatorial race. Melanie Mason is a senior political reporter for Politico and joins us to break down why Harris is not interested in leading state government and what this means for the Democratic Party moving forward. Welcome back, Melanie.
Happy to be here.
Were you surprised about the announcement yesterday?
You know, I think I was surprised at the timing because I think we had all thought at the end of summer, I thought I'd have at least August to, you know, get my ducks in a row. But I think that if I was looking at sort of the breadcrumbs that were being left and some of the reporting that we were doing, I think she was very seriously considering this job and was running the traps about what that would look like. But I think I was picking up on maybe these notes of hesitation or maybe skepticism that she was actually going to jump in. And I think that's reflected in the ultimate decision.
Yeah, your story this morning, it really focuses on the why. And you quote Sean Clegg, who's one of Harris's longest serving political advisors, saying that, quote, she had some reasonable doubt. What were some of those doubts and how did they manifest in the last few weeks?
I think part of what we have to do is put ourselves in the mindset of somebody who had just been through 4 years as vice president and then this absolutely just bonkers period of time where she suddenly becomes the presidential nominee in these extraordinary circumstances. She runs a 107-day campaign, which is, you know, unprecedented, and, you know, then loses a pretty wrenching loss. And then almost immediately she comes back and her hometown is, you know, ravaged by these historic wildfires. Like, I think that there was just like a lot on her plate, a lot on everybody's plate, but especially hers. And so I think that, you know, would if this decision was put to her in, you know, another year or so, would it have been different? I don't know, maybe. But one of the things I kept hearing a lot when I was constantly peppering her folks about, like, what's she doing now? What is she thinking now? Is they would say, like, think of her like a human. You know, she has to process. I think that she always knew that this job would be a challenging job. And what, you know, the people close to her will say she wasn't put off by those challenges. But I think that there was a recognition that if your heart's not 110% in it, then that's not really what the people of California deserve. And, you know, if she is somebody that's trying to think of, like, where can she have the maximum impact, like, maybe a recognition in herself that she wasn't fully on board with this idea maybe meant that that was, like, not the best path for her to go down.
Yeah, I mean, so much happened in the last year and in some ways unprecedented, at least in recent history, when running for president. Was the confidence there from Democratic Party leaders, from donors, to throw their weight behind Harris had she chose to run for governor?
We did a lot of reporting with Democratic activists, party officials, donors, and there was definitely a sense of meh, for lack of a better word, right? That it wasn't necessarily this overwhelming swell of enthusiasm. And I think a lot of that is a reflection of the hangover that people felt from the 2024 election. People would say, we don't necessarily blame her for what happened, but it hurts to think about it. It hurts to revisit that. And so I don't think there was necessarily a ton of enthusiasm for people to kind of put themselves back in that mind space. Now, people who are very close to her believe that if she had gotten into the race, that a lot of those folks would have come home. And I think that that's probably right. I do think that the fact that she had universal name ID, that she did have all of these kind of structural advantages, I think that, you know, looking like you're likely going to be a winner has a way of making a lot of people want to jump on board. But I do think that there was certainly a drumbeat of hesitation that was sort of within the California political sphere.
Was it just kind of a reflex or expected that following the loss after a presidential election that she would jump into or potentially jump into the race to be California's governor? I guess, when did the idea begin circulating? Like, hey, maybe the former vice president would give the governorship a go.
You know, I have recollections of, like, batting this about with, you know, the parlor games that we all play as political junkies, you know, back in 2024, before she became the nominee, when it was like, oh, well, what happens if Biden Harris loses? And, you know, can she maybe come back? and kind of like laughing that off, like, ha ha ha, like that's probably not going to happen. But I think that two things I think were a factor. I think the first is that, you know, she did become a sharper candidate on this presidential race than I think we had seen from her, especially in her previous presidential race. So I think people were like reminded in some ways of the skills that she brought to the table. And the other thing is that there is a very crowded presidential field, gubernatorial field here in California right now, but I don't think anybody had really captured the zeitgeist. So in some ways it felt like it could be hers for the take. And so I think when you look at both sort of her celebrity and her notoriety paired with the sense that like she could kind of maybe waltz in and look like a very strong contender from the outset, it started to feel more real. And then I think, you know, when she's back in California and she's reacquainting herself with the state, which she hasn't lived in really since 2016, you know, I think that she was really running the traps of like, what does this look like? What would it be to run for governor? And what would it be to actually serve as governor? I think that she gave this some really thorough thought.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question, because although she has served in state office before as attorney general, as senator, this is a federal position. California is her home state, but she's living in Washington, D.C. She's vice president, you know, during the Biden administration. Is it a natural progression or fit to kind of go back into state government, which is run differently than the federal government?
I think that would be a question she would have faced a lot if she got in. And I think she would have sort of had to prove her chops in that sense, right? I mean, I think that this race is going to be about two different things as I think about this governor's race. The first is sort of the California versus Trump dynamic, that nationalized dynamic. And like, Lord knows, Kamala Harris knows how to run a race against President Trump. She's had a lot of experience doing that. But then the second part of this race is kind of what's the future of California? And sort of regardless of who is president, the state has been facing challenges when it comes to affordability, when it comes to housing, homelessness. I mean, those are things that we'd be talking about if Kamala Harris was in the White House right now. And those are areas that we haven't necessarily heard her talk about much in depth. So it would have been sort of a question of like, does she prove her policy chops or her mettle, or does she lay out a vision of what she wants to do to confront those problems? We never really heard that from her, because she was in these federal roles. Mm.
What stood out to me yesterday is once that announcement dropped, the emails from candidates reflexively like filled inboxes just moments or seconds after the announcement. So this definitely clears some room for the race. What does this mean for the field currently, for the candidates who are currently running for governor?
It's funny because I was seeing the fundraising emails pop up. I was also getting blown up my phone by every other campaign. It was kind of like, oh, you guys sort of woke up and realized that there's a governor's race going on, because everything was just so frozen that even the campaigns, it just, everything felt kind of sleepy. And it was like, bam, everybody woke up yesterday, wanted to say like, this is our moment. We can seize the momentum. You know, I think that the obvious sort of first person that a lot of people look to is Katie Porter, because she's the one that has the most name ID in the field right now. You know, all of her time with the whiteboard, being on, you know, cable news, her Senate run where she got in third place, but she was, you know, that was a fairly well-publicized race. She just, there's a familiarity, I think, with California voters that she has that a lot of the other candidates don't. But I think that we saw that there were other people who were trying to capitalize on this moment as well. So, you know, Javier Becerra, the former state attorney general, he did the rounds on Spanish language television last night. And I thought that was an interesting kind of sign of like, okay, here's the constituency that he really wants to like wave at this particular moment. Eleni Kounoulakis, the lieutenant governor, you know, her team made it clear that they got a phone call from Kamala Harris before the news was public because they have a close friendship. And, you know, Speaker Emerita Nancy Pelosi, you know, said that she was backing her campaign on cable news. So they were like, this is great momentum for us. So I think in some ways there's a real jump ball right now. And what's going to be interesting for me as a political reporter is like, who is able to seize this moment and kind of position themselves as the real front runner? Because the truth is that most Californians hadn't really tuned into this race at this point anyway. So it really does feel like an open question.
Does this impact Republican candidates at all? I think of Steve Hilton or Chad Bianco.
I think they're disappointed. because I think that they love the idea of running against Kamala Harris. There's nothing that would sort of galvanize the Republican base voters more than having Kamala Harris on the ticket. And so I think that they are desperately trying to make sure that they get into that top two finish so that they're not boxed out by two Republicans. Harris would have made that a lot easier. I think another sort of faction that's probably pretty disappointed right now are Republicans in House races. Because you remember, California has some pretty competitive House races. The battle for Congress is going to be huge next year in the midterms. And I think Republicans really loved the idea that if a Kamala Harris is at the top of the ticket, maybe it'll still be tough for a Republican to win statewide as governor. But in some of these key seats, or these are particularly districts that Donald Trump won, having Kamala Harris as a motivator for Republican voters in November, they were really salivating over that. So I'm sure they're pretty bummed this morning.
Do you think eventually she'll endorse a candidate, and will that endorsement matter?
You know, that's a great question. And, you know, she has relationships with a lot of people in the field, right? I mean, you know, she has a close personal friendship with Eleni Kounoulakis. They really do go back. And in some ways, I feel like there's a natural, there's the sort of shared San Francisco bond. There's a very similar kind of donor circle. So, you know, there's that. Katie Porter actually worked with her when Kamala Harris was attorney general in that big mortgage case that then Attorney General Harris had brought. You know, she and Javier Becerra served in the Biden administration together. So in some ways it's messy, right? Because there's like a lot of relationships. All of them were very enthusiastic backers of hers when she was running for president back in 2024. But they also all kind of sent some jabs as they were waiting for her to get into the race. I think of Antonio Villaraigosa, the former Los Angeles mayor. You know, he was somebody who was, you know, very supportive of Harris running for president, but then was sort of saying, like, hurry up and get into this governor's race. And guess what? I'm going to run no matter what. I'm not going to defer to you. So I can't imagine she loved that rhetoric. And so I would be pretty shocked if an endorsement came.
Yeah. And Porter changed her tune, right? Initially, didn't she say she was going to duck out if Harris was going to run, or she'd be open to it, but then kind of changed course and was like, no, I'm running regardless.
Yeah, I think that there was she had very purposefully kind of like kept things hazy and said, you know, that she would be a near field clearing candidate. And of course, the question was, you know, is Porter including herself as part of the people that would be cleared from the field? And then, yes, then they definitively sort of changed their mind. And I think that that reflects the vibe shift that we were seeing in that May, June period, which is why I was ultimately not all that surprised at Harris's decision, because we were getting a sense. I think the other candidates were getting a sense of like, oh, you know, maybe Harris doesn't clear the field like I thought she would. I still think that reality and some of the like structural advantages Harris would have had probably would have won the day. But it did send a message that all of a sudden a lot of these candidates were saying, we love the former vice president. If she wants to get in the race, that's great. But I'm still in it. That was a pretty big tell.
Is elected office still a possibility for Harris? And if so, what would that look like and what could that be?
I think that she very deliberately kept a door open yesterday for potentially running again in 2028. Although what I'm told from folks in her inner circle is that that wasn't the driver in when she was making the decision. It was not a, you know, is it going to be governor on one hand or president on the other? So I think that, look, between now and when that primary kicks off in earnest in about 18 months or so, like that's a lifetime in politics. And I think that the challenge for Harris right now is that there seems to be an attitude in the Democratic Party nationally of a desire for a fresh face, right? Change candidates. We see this, you know, in races like the New York City mayor, where like a 33-year-old assemblyman all of a sudden like beats Andrew Cuomo in the New York primary. I mean, that's a pretty remarkable thing. And I don't think that that's as much of an ideological thing as it is a desire for newness. Harris has been part of the Democratic establishment for a long time. But those winds can shift. And so I think that by keeping the door open, by keeping those, you know, conversations, you know, I'm sure she'll be touching base with key people in key states, and by continuing to capitalize on her name ID, that is the biggest advantage that she has. It keeps her in the conversation. And I think that that's what she wants to do at this moment.
Melanie, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having me.
Melanie Mason is a senior political reporter for Politico, discussing former Vice President Kamala Harris's decision not to run for governor and how that is shaping the 2026 race. Up next, it's been 1 year since the Park Fire ignited in Chico's Bidwell Park, quickly becoming one of the largest wildfires in state history. We'll hear from leaders and fire officials about how the community is rebuilding and healing, as well as the lesson learned as California enters peak fire season. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.